Hey, welcome to the Football Dive podcast at the World Cup, where we'll be looking at content and analysis throughout Qatar 2022. And the tournament is finally upon us. It's been a long wait. It's the middle of a season, so it feels a bit strange. But England have sprung to life with a 6-2 opening victory against Iran in an incredible attacking display from Gareth Southgate's guys. So, Miles, what exactly did England get right from an attacking point of view in this game? Because it was a joy to watch, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely everything. That's the most positive thing about it. There's no room for improvement in an attacking display like that where you get six goals. You saw pretty much every attacking player we've got on the pitch and contributing positively, which shows how well this squad can be used for rotation. And they just looked really threatening in every dimension. They looked like they were ready to run at defenders. They looked like they were ready to receive crosses into the box. Nice little interplay outside the box. It was brilliant. There's nothing that this forward line couldn't do in that game. And that's really encouraging.
I think with the forward line as well, there's so many options we could have picked to start this game. I have Foden's that down as one of the ones that I wanted to see start, but Saka started and he did brilliantly, didn't he? I think him alongside Jude Bellingham were two of the outstanding players, Dave, weren't they, from this England performance. Did you think the attacking performance was what Southgate was going to go with? And after seeing them perform that well, do you think that is what he'll stick with again in the next game?
Yeah, there was a nice sort of fluidity in the attacking third. I think a lot of people probably were surprised with not necessarily obviously Harry Kane's inclusion, but probably both Saka and Sterling. We have often seen it either Foden or Grealish kind of offering that little bit of balance. But he's gone with obviously that pace and that movement in behind. But yeah, it couldn't have gone much better for England, really. And one thing I think I'd like to highlight as well is that a lot of players kind of chipped in with goals. It wasn't, and Harry Kane wasn't even amongst them, which is obviously got to be a first with us scoring that many goals in a game. So you've got to say as well, for a lot of the players coming into this tournament, I think we were quite worried about maybe players not quite in form, probably low on confidence, some of them, but everyone chipping in, that can only be great for confidence and great going forward now. Into these next couple of games.
Yeah, there's a small concern, I guess, Miles, wasn't there, that the form that we showed going into this tournament wasn't the best. I mean, so many poor performances, but this was like a clean slate and so many players starting their first World Cup game, Saka included, Bellingham, you wouldn't even know it was his first game. It was such a mature display. How much confidence can they take from this? It was incredible to watch, but what do you think the players will be feeling right now?
Yeah, they've got to feel great. I think people are being a bit pessimistic on Iran's chances if they're saying, well, this is just Iran, that should be an easy win. Bear in mind, this is the team that are ranked in the top 20 in the world right now. So there's by no means an easy game for England to win, let alone put six past them. And there are players there that will really ride high off this. Let's not forget, the last time we saw Saka and Rashford at a major tournament, they were missing penalties in the Euro final. So to come back and look that calm, Rashford, he just come off the bench. It was three touches of the ball and he'd scored. And Saka's first goal in particular, the finish was just so nice. But these are players that will really be riding the high of that. You set a tone for a tournament with that first game. And we've seen England at many major tournaments not do that in the right way. We've seen us underwhelm in that first game and what it can cost us later on. Whereas this was the complete opposite. We blew a team away in the first game. And now it sets the benchmark. We should be expecting to do similar against Wales and the USA if we can keep this momentum going.
Yeah, I think the question mark for me was whether we'd have a pragmatic approach in any of the games, and especially a game like this, you'd hope not. And I think starting with a 4-3-3 was a really positive approach from Southgate from the off. And he could have picked any combination of players up front, like you said, but the players he chose really performed, didn't he? Not only that, Dave, but you already commented on the quality of the substitutes that came on as well. That's going to be key for Southgate, isn't it? Having a squad, especially in an attacking sense, that he can kind of rotate between as the tournament progresses.
Yeah, the strength that we have in depth is something we've not really seen before, had, you know, the riches of in the past. You look at some of the players that are coming off onto the pitch, is scary, really. The likes of Foden, Grealish. And we can only be really kind of grateful for that we've got players like that to come on and make a difference.
In terms of an attacking display, though, I mean, there were so many quality goals there, Miles, wasn't there? It was just a show of real attacking intent from the start, which I think I was surprised by. I thought there'd be a bit more pragmatism than that. But the way that the forwards went for goal all the time, the interplay was quick, it was slick, it was clinical. I think we had, seven shots on target. Six of them went in, so such a turnaround from what we've seen lately from Gareth Southgate's team. Do you think he'll have the same approach for every one of these group games now? Because the quality of the teams isn't a huge amount better, is it?
I think he should. I'm not convinced he will. And I think there's a logic behind not doing it in some ways as well. This was the lineup I wanted to see. Almost player for player, that's exactly how I would have lined up in this game. I maybe would have put Ben White in for Maguire. But Maguire had a decent game in a forward sense, at least. I'm sure we'll talk about the defensive display later on. But does this system work against a Brazil or an Argentina? That midfield, I love it. I want to see that more in the tournament. Bellingham is the one that will bring the energy. Rice is the one that brings the solidity. Mount brings the creativity. That's perfect. And they all can kind of complement each other in those areas. That's a midfield three I can get behind. However, I'll be really surprised if Southgate sticks with that when it comes to bigger teams. So I wonder if we do that again against the US and win that game quite comfortably, I wonder whether against Wales, he might try and revert back to this back five and just make sure it works.
For me, I think the biggest positive I'm taking from this game is just Jude Bellingham. He absolutely ran the show for England. And for a 19-year-old, you know, he was so young at the last tournament that he was watching it at telly at home with his family. He's there now bossing the midfield at a World Cup in his first game and scoring as well. Yeah. Dave, what did you make of Bellingham's performance? It was such a good thing to see from an England perspective, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. And that's the key difference, really, between this midfield and the midfield we had at the last tournament. Obviously, I had a lot of fans moaning about Calvin Phillips and obviously Declan Rice in that pivot, double pivot, where we're probably arguably being a little bit too defensive. But seeing this midfield now is kind of a breath of fresh air, seeing Bellingham dominate that midfield, really. And he was the standout player in this game, and it's something that hopefully will continue. If he can keep growing into the sort of player that we think he's going to turn into, you know, it's exciting times as an England fan.
This midfield then with Bellingham, Mount and Rice. Bellingham kind of papered over a few of the cracks, didn't he, Miles, with the way he kind of mopped up any mistakes that were made. And there were a few kind of stray balls from Rice in particular, who didn't have his best game. But I think Bellingham made it look a lot better than it actually was. Do you think he'll stick with this midfield throughout the tournament, whoever the opponents are? How do you think Gareth Southgate will take this information now for the future?
It wasn't the strongest performance from Mount and Rice that we've ever seen, but it didn't really need to be. Rice's strength in this England team come from a defensive point of view, and there weren't many occasions where he was called upon there. I think he just needed time to get into the game. And there were other things that I thought he brought really well. There were a couple of times he picked the ball up and he moved forward 40 yards. And that's a really impressive thing to see in our midfield and something that we've perhaps lacked in the past. And we've been a bit too safe to do. And Mount, we know of Mount's ability and how reliable he's been for Southgate. And when we're scoring six goals, it doesn't really matter what Mount is doing, to be totally honest. In the next game, he'll probably be the star player and it will rotate round. That's how these tournaments go. So I'd like to see Southgate stick with this midfield. He won't. Calvin Phillips will come back in when we start to get to bigger teams. I'm very sure of that. I think we'll probably see him tested in the group stage at some point. As long as we don't see Jordan Henderson, anything's progress, really, isn't it? And who knows? Maybe Conor Gallagher can fill the role that Mount has played today as well. It would be interesting to see whether he got a call up at some point. But if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And today was, I thought it was perfect. I'm really happy with the selection today.
Yeah, it was a sign of real progressive football, wasn't it? I think if we do go back to having a Phillips and Rice pivot or putting Henderson in the mix, it suddenly feels like a negative step, doesn't it? And I don't want to see that. So fans, I think, will be really happy with seeing not just the setup that Southgate started with, but the result it's produced. It's 6-2. The only thing you could nitpick is that we conceded two, and some of the defensive frailties were on show when Iran tried to break forward, including one of their goals. So that, if you're nitpicking, will be worrying. But do you think, Dave, that we can see that as a something to worry about against a bigger opponent, maybe? Have we got fractures there that might appear later on?
Yeah, I think, I don't want to say, obviously, I think that last goal that we conceded, that was such a contentious decision with the penalty. The first goal, you could probably say that Maguire is in this situation where he's not ever at his strongest. He's clearly had a weakness there for quite a while now. We know that he's quite heavy on his feet. He's not great on the turn. So I feel like when we do go to a back five, and it's inevitability really for me, that when we do face a much stronger opposition, that's going to happen. And I, to be honest, I probably agree with it. I I wouldn't stick with a back four with this defence, because we are by no means, you know, in a strong position. I mean, that's probably our weakest area now. In the past, when we've probably had one of the best defences in the world, with the likes, obviously, in the past, you've got Rio Ferdinand, John Terry, Sol Campbell, centre-backs. We've been blessed, really, in that area, and we're probably not so much right now. So I feel like maybe a back five is the right move for me, personally.
Yeah, I think as we record this, just worth saying that Wales are playing against the USA, so we don't know the outcome of that game yet. But I can't see this England setup struggling against either of those teams from what we know about them, Miles, can you? I know that sounds a bit premature and a bit arrogant, but I honestly didn't expect a performance of this much of an emphatic attacking display, did you?
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that Taremi is the best striker we'll face in the group stage. Wales have Kiefer Moore, who's obviously a bit of a physical presence and a different kind of striker, and the US, their forward players are more wide players, Timothy Weah maybe, but I don't think we'll see anyone cause as many problems for our centre-backs as Taremi did in this game. So it's good to have got through that hurdle, and we'll see them settle. The injury to Maguire might be one worry, but I probably would have played Ben White anyway in this game. So hopefully he will come in for the next one, although I'm not certain we'll see him at all in this tournament. Southgate elected to bring on Eric Dier when Maguire went off in a back four, which just struck me as a really bizarre decision. And it showed that Southgate obviously has his favourites. We know that. That's why Mount is in there over Foden and why Dier came on today. But Ben White has been England's best defender this year. I know that's been at fullback, but he's so versatile and so capable that I'd like to see him come in. And I think he does make a more solid defensive line against a bigger team. He has to come in at some point for me.
Yeah, I think you're right about the favourites. We've seen Eric Dier ahead of him coming on when we're more than comfortable in the game.
Yeah.
And we are probably not going to see James Maddison really very much, if at all, either, because we can see how much attacking talent we have. And he's got places and replacements for every position. So, yeah, that doesn't bother me at all. We've got a squad and he's using it. So I can't fault the result. I'm absolutely buzzing with it. Strange to see that much added time in a game, wasn't it? And just quickly on that one, Miles, the injury to the goalkeeper, the concussion discussion, he should have gone off straight away, shouldn't he?
Yeah, FIFA have let us down there, really, and the ruling lets us down. And it's been a talking point for so long, and protecting players has to be a priority. You don't want a horrible incident to take place on this pitch that ends someone's career. It strikes me that when you've got a player who's so important to the way you play, like Iran having their goalkeeper, the decision has to be taken out of their hands. You saw their captain actively encouraging him to remain on the pitch when he clearly could not work out even where he was. That's bizarre to me. He was throwing water in his face like that was going to fix a concussion. Really, what you need to do is the referee needs to step in and say, remove this player from the pitch. I'll make the decision for you. It doesn't count as your substitute. You've got that concussion substitution now. Get him off the pitch. Protect the player. Because what would have happened? He stayed on the pitch, which was ludicrous. What would have happened if Trippier put another ball in that moment and he clashed heads again or something? Who knows? It's just not worth risking or finding out what's going to happen. So a law has to change there. But there was a few points where I thought the referee didn't cover himself in glory, to be honest.
Yeah, I think there's a few parts of this World Cup so far where it feels like FIFA are struggling to win the PR battle with the fans, aren't they? The fact that it's in Qatar, obviously, which we can talk about endlessly. The added time they've added on. I think even in the Netherlands game, that was a heck of a lot added on at the very end.
8 minutes.
Yeah, mad. And the fact that it just feels weird as a World Cup, doesn't it, being in November and December. And Dave, as a fan, how are you finding it so far? You getting swept up in the World Cup feeling?
I'm struggling, to be honest. Obviously, what you mentioned there, everything surrounding the nation itself, but also the time of year, it just feels very unfamiliar to me. Obviously, off of past World Cups, there's not really any sort of... It doesn't feel like... I can't feel a togetherness with the nation at the minute. That obviously, the time of year obviously makes a big difference with that. We obviously can't get in the outdoors like we normally would. So I'm struggling a little bit. The atmospheres in the stadiums just don't seem the same to me. Obviously, there's only been, you know, 3-4 games nearly. So let's give it a chance. But the accessibility to the World Cup seems to be an issue there, along with a lot of other factors that are kind of keeping people away from the stadiums and from the World Cup itself, again, is another issue. So we could go on and on about it, but I'm, I'm going to leave it there. But yeah, like you'd love there to be a bit more of a good feeling around it. And there's just seems to be a spark that's lacking at the minute for me.
Yeah, I think as football fans as well, we've got so many memories of World Cups in the past where they're full of colour, full of life. And that's all from the fans and the footballing culture of that particular nation. But Miles, this is not a fault of the Qatari people. You know, they didn't want this World Cup. It was just kind of thrusted upon them. So they're not a footballing nation necessarily. I'm sure they're really intrigued by the prospect of a World Cup being on their doorstep. Doesn't feel like the same kind of carnival as we normally have, does it? And that's a bit of a shame.
Yeah, it's impossible to. It's so weird because we're huge football fans. We talk about football on here every week because we're such big football fans. England playing their first game at the World Cup should be the biggest day of the year for us. Today I was at work. I was teaching while the game was going on and I had to watch it back afterwards. Looking out my window and it's pouring down with rain and dark outside. Yeah. And I'm not in a pub or celebrating it with my friends. Instead, I drive home from work and you can't even tell that a game of football has happened. And that's everything that's wrong with this World Cup in so many ways. This is meant to be everyone's game, and you've got it in a place that doesn't embrace everyone, at a time that doesn't suit anyone, and in a an environment where you can't share it with everyone. That's the exact opposite of what you want this World Cup to be. I've got memories of our success in Russia where I'm watching it with hundreds of fans in the middle of Birmingham. I've got a photo of myself outside the Bull Ring in Birmingham with a load of random fans singing songs with drinks in their hands that I've never met before after we've won a penalty shootout. That's what I want. Maybe we'll get that on Friday when we're playing an evening game against the US. But kicking off the World Cup in the middle of a Monday, in the middle of November, while it's raining and dark outside, just it felt really hard to get excited about. And I've just watched England score 6 goals. Jack Grealish has scored a World Cup goal. That should be the best moment of my footballing year, really. Instead, I'm like, this is brilliant. But it was only the same as watching a Nations League game in some ways. I didn't feel like the World Cup, and that's a shame.
Yeah, there's a few topics we could talk about this World Cup. I mean, the fact that the beer was banned at the last minute, the fact that they've stopped the One Love armbands and there have been sanctions for it. And fair play to Alex Scott at the BBC for wearing hers in defiance. And, you know, I respect journalists for doing that and highlighting those issues, even if they're trying to silence the players and the managers and keep it on football. It's a lot more than that, isn't it? Let's face it. But switching back to football and the other games that happened in Group A. So Qatar, the host themselves, were really poor against Ecuador, who weren't that great themselves. It was pretty much the Enner Valencia show, wasn't it, Dave? Who, you know, he got a couple of goals and he was the difference, quite clearly.
Yeah, the start of the game, as soon as they took the lead, Ecuador, you didn't really know how many goals were going to be scored. It looked like it could be a cricket score at one stage. And that's the one thing that stood out to me is that the lack of quality in that Qatar team and that's played 16 matches in the last year, which is obviously a crazy number of matches for an international team. You'd sort of expect them to show a little bit more, resemble a side that, you know, has got a bit of unity about them and cohesion, show a bit of quality, but they lacked all of that really. And that was quite disappointing for me.
Ecuador taking that game 2-0 with those two Enner Valencia goals. But also in the other game in that group, nothing really to be concerned about either, with Senegal and the Netherlands both looking very nervous, really, Miles. And 2-0 win for the Netherlands, but some obvious omission there for Senegal, wasn't there? It was clear to see.
Yeah, obviously missing Mane is so huge for Senegal because anytime they got forward, there just wasn't someone there to finish those chances for them or be a bit more clinical. Instead, it was Idrissa Gana Gueye shooting from distance most of the time. So they did look like they were missing him. And Holland looked like a team that have just missed the last World Cup. They look so nervous. Yeah, I think they'll grow into the tournament. I think that they'll find their feet and they'll gel together as a unit. But whereas we saw England earlier almost look like a club side who've come off the back of a Premier League season and moved straight into it with match fitness, sharpness, togetherness, Holland just looked like they were a bit scared. There was a moment, for example, where Frenkie de Jong gets inside the box and he checks back twice rather than hitting a shot. And it just looked like uncertainty. And that could have cost them if it weren't for the fact that Senegal were probably worse and Mendy's form is so poor that it was very easy to capitalise on a couple of goalkeeping errors. So a good result for Holland. I think they'll be happy to get the win when they're probably not playing their best and we'll probably see better of them later in the tournament.
Yeah, nothing so far to worry England, I don't think, if they ever get to face one of those teams. But the World Cup has begun. If you want to see our previews for any of the teams that are taking part, then please do check out the shorts on our channel. We've previewed pretty much every team now, I think. So have a look and see what you think. See how wrong we get it towards the end of the tournament. But we will be here throughout the tournament every few days, just reviewing everything that's gone on and commenting on all the games that we've seen and who our favourites might be going forward, any wild cards within the players that we might find. So stay tuned for that. But that's all the action for now. It's good to have the World Cup back in whatever, guys. We love a World Cup, though, and we love a tournament. The Euros last year was fabulous, and I think covering it this time around in the World Cup is going to be just as exciting, so stay tuned. But guys, thank you for your time. Can't wait to see how England progress after this. Absolutely buzzing. I think as the tournament progresses and we get to those kind of more tasty games, I think we'll see more of an atmosphere in the grounds then, because you can't not want to turn up to see them, surely. That's going to get the Qatari people interested. But we'll be buzzing for it. Hopefully you will too. Thanks a lot for joining us, guys, and I'll speak to you soon.